Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We come live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albader. Fred, hi, how are you tonight?
Carlos, I'm fantastic. The 2014 golf season is officially over, and the 2015 season has begun. So we still got a lot to talk about. Adam Scott was in Australia. Hideki Matsuyama and Jordan Spieth battled in Japan. 17-year-old Lydia Ko grabbed the cash. Let's go.
Let's go. We have a lot to talk about. And we also have, as usual, a very important guest of the weekend. His name is Ross Kavinghi. So we'll be talking about him. He's the president and CEO of Powerfield Golf. But, Fred, as usual, we start with the Par 5 news, and you get to tee it off. And I'm right now in Plano, Texas, and I believe you have some news about somebody from Plano, Texas, and some Tiger something. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Carlos, you know, we hardly ever get to talk about this guy, this guy called Tiger Woods. He's making headlines again. You know, he's getting ready to come back to action. He had his little soiree there in Orlando this year. It's going to be the Hero World Challenge, December 4th through the 7th at Isleworth Golf Club in Orlando. Well, he made an announcement on Twitter. You know, he doesn't like to talk to media types. You know, Dan Jenkins, you know, he's still mad at him and everybody else in the media. And so he came on Twitter and said, hey, I got a new swing consultant, not swing coach. You know, not mentor, not whatever. He's got a swing consultant. You know, Tiger had back surgery at the end of March, which limited his ability to play last year, most of the year. He only had 7 starts. His best finish was a 225 in the WPGC Cadillac Championship. He tried to return too soon. He was forced to withdraw after that awkward shot out of that big bunker at Akron at Firestone in the WGC Bridgestone. He ended up missing the cut of the PGA and said, okay, that's it. I'm packing it in. So he's been resting, relaxing. Everyone says he looks thinner. He looks more fit. He's been doing more core work, not doing the heavy lifting. But in the midst of all this, he's picked up a new swing mentor, a new swing coach. Sean Foley had served Woods as his third swing coach after Hank Henning resigned in March 2010. Rich Harmon was Woods' first coach, and he won 8 of his 14 major championships while under Harmon's tutelage. Chris Como is the new guy. He is a PGA professional at Glen Eagles Country Club, and he's the youngest on Golf Digest 2013 list of top 100 golf teachers. He was introduced to Woods by a good friend, Nota Begay, and had several discussions with Woods on the physics and science of the golf swing. I don't know if you've seen the videos. He, you know, Como even jumps off a high dive and swings the golf club, trying to make the point that, you know, about anchoring your feet and, you know, turning the core and all that stuff. So, you know, he's got some different ways of doing it. You know, Woods is constantly seeking to gain a deeper understanding of the swing mechanics, and Como should be just the guy to enlighten him. He's pursuing a master's degree in biomechanics. I kind of had to look that up, Carl. I don't know what biomechanics means. I just go to an auto. I go to an auto mechanic. You know, I took biology in school, but biomechanics. You know, what is that? You know, how to grow plants in your car? I don't know. But he incorporates that scientific knowledge into his teaching. Evidently, Tiger didn't think much of the unsolicited advice from Hall of Famers Lee Trevino and Gary Player to stop worrying about swing mechanics and technique and just go play and be the best player in the world again. So after winning five events in 2013, Woods is coming off one of his worst years on tour. He's going to turn 39, Carlos, right here at the end of December. Father Time keeps marching on. There's precious few major championships that are won by professional golfers over the age of 40. Everyone thought Woods would have little problem catching Nicklaus when he won his 14th major championship title in 2008 at the U.S. Open. But here we are, 6 years later. It is questionable whether or not he can still reach the 19 majors he needs to surpass Nicklaus. Watching Tiger Woods trying to reach his career goal is why sports fans watch athletic events. One lone man attempting to defy the odds and win the prize. It's the ultimate reality television. We have been fortunate to witness the career of one of the greatest golfers of all time, Carlos. And if Woods believes Chris Como can help him reach his goal, then let's watch and enjoy every bogey, birdie, and eagle. I'm hoping he has a great year and picks off a couple majors and gets everybody all excited again.
I think we're going to have to get a deep dive into that after watching that video from Chris Como. So we'll see, but hopefully he can get his swing back, and we need to see him, especially Rory McIlroy in the way he's playing. Hey, Fred, you know this popular golf joke that goes something like this. Hey, man, your back must be tired. Why? Because you've been carrying your partner all day. You know, as golfers, we've all been in that position as either the person carrying the workload or being carried, which is mostly my case. Or maybe we've just been the wise guy trying to be the funny, mostly Fred's case. Regardless, no one has handled such a situation better than Brent Grant. You know, he's a recent graduate from Mauna Loa High School in Honolulu. Grant, he's just 18. He was set to try to qualify for the USGA's new event, the U.S. Amateur Four Ball Championship, last Friday, with 47-year-old Bill Walbert. When Walbert was calling to surgery that day, Grant invited another friend to team up with him instead. But when he arrived there at the Honolulu Country Club, he was informed the deadline had passed for making a substitution. So under USGA Rule 31-2, however, Grant was still allowed to compete as a single. Turns out, you know, the kid's got a pretty strong back. Grant shot a bogey-free 63 by himself to claim the site's only qualifying spot for the May event at the Olympic Club. After playing 1-2 and beating an entire field of competitors wasn't incredible enough, the 63 was 5 shots better than Grant's previous low competitive round. That came back in 2013 when Grant, who plans on attending Oregon State next fall, qualified for the U.S. Amateur with Walbert on his back. Grant and Walbert, who is a retired U.S. Army major turned physician assistant, met at the Navy Marine Golf Course near Pearl Harbor, and have been friends since Grant's freshman year. Grant's dad, James, is in the Navy. So barring another last-minute surgery or another unforeseen circumstance, Grant and Walbert will team up at the Olympic Golf Club. Grant did the heavy lifting in earning the pair's trip to San Francisco, but at least his older partner will cover the travel expenses as a thank you. Grant, it was about time that guy picked up the slack.
You know, I saw that and I read that article. Isn't that an amazing story? That's just almost unbelievable. It's almost like a 17-year-old winning $1.5 million playing golf, you know. But yeah, that's a great, good for him, man. That is just a great story. Hey, Carlos, we witnessed something really historic. Well, a couple things, you know. Charlie Sifford received his Presidential Medal of Freedom yesterday, but another thing that happened over the weekend that, you know, I don't know, Carlos, if you noticed, but that sound that you heard last weekend, you know, it really wasn't from Naples. You know, Lydia Ko didn't get that excited when she won the $1.5 million, but that big roar you heard, that was coming from Indianapolis when Susie Whaley became the first woman ever elected to a PGA of American office. very historic. PGA, you know, of America is really the group that got professional golf going. Of course, there was the USGA and amateur golf, but then when professional golf started going, PGA of America was born, and so it's been around for a long time. It's an old organization. They have a lot of bureaucracy. They have a lot of old boy networks, mostly men. You know, and for a woman to be elected, that's a pretty big deal. Susie Whaley is a PGA professional from Connecticut, and, you know, she's kind of accustomed to coming in first. She was the first woman to qualify for a men's PGA Tour event a few years ago, if you remember that. She won the 2002 Connecticut PGA Championship by winning the event over other male professionals. She earned a spot in the 2003 Greater Hartford Open. And I think, I'm not sure if Babe Zaharias had to qualify or if she was just invited to play. Michelle Lee was always just invited. I think Susie Whaley is the only woman to ever qualify for a PGA Tour event. She also qualified for LPGA Championships in 2003, 2004, 2005. She missed a cut in all 3 years, but she's been a top-flight player for a long time. Really a good teacher, well known throughout the country. She won a hotly contested battle over fellow PGA professionals Russ Libby and Michael Haywood. She had come under a little bit of fire from inside the rank and file of the PGA of America when she publicly supported the impeachment of former PGA of America President Ted Bishop over his social media problem here a few weeks ago. With her election, she's on track to become the first woman president of the PGA of America in 2018. You come in, you're the secretary for 2 years, you move up to vice president for 2 years, and then you become the president. It's an incredibly special day for me, my family, the Connecticut section, and our members, Willie said. Our association has a long-term strategic plan, and I'm excited to be part of implementing that plan. We have so many opportunities to bring diverse groups into the game. That's what I'm excited about. Derek Sprague, who was named interim president after the dismissal of Bishop, was elected to fill the 2-year presidential term. Paul Levy was elected vice president as in line to replace Sprague in 2016. Sprague said of Whaley's election, "I think it's great to have a woman in a national leadership position because I think it opens the door for women in other leadership positions. It can only inspire other women to get into leadership positions. Women are continually breaking down barriers and accepting roles in the top echelons of golf cars. In September, we saw the RNA elect to admit women members. Augusta National recently announced the addition of its third woman member, IBM chairwoman Virginia Rometty. The PGA announced the new partnership with the LPGA earlier this year to replace the LPGA Championship with the new PGA Women's Championship that's going to have one of the largest purses in all of women's golf. The PGA of America has been taking some lumps recently over its selection of Ryder Cup captains and the unfortunate social media mishap of Mr. Bishop. But this selection of Susie Whaley and her progression up the ladder to the top spot will give women one of the biggest voices in the game of golf. You know, she's going to be probably the most powerful woman in golf. Just think about it, Carlos. The USGA, the PGA Tour, the RNA, and then the PGA of America. These are the four groups that really control golf throughout the world. Never has had a woman at the top of those. You know, and we've got women running Fortune 500 companies. We've got women at the top of our governments around the world. You know, this is long overdue probably, and really, I see this as a good thing, and I think Susie Whaley is really a good fit for this. I'm pretty excited about it. I'm going to try and get her on the show sometime down the road, and hopefully we can talk to her a little bit.
Hopefully we can, and right now she's on course to become the organization's first female president in 2018 too, so hopefully she can continue to break these barriers. And the organizations, like you mentioned, keep getting more women into this. It's about time for that to do. And to help a little bit with what you said about if she was the first one to qualify, you talked about Bessa Harris. Bessa Harris was the first one in 1945 to qualify for the Los Angeles Open. So she was the first, but Susie Whaley was the first one in 58 years to do it. So there you have it. That's to add up to what Fred was saying. Hey, Fred, I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, Fox Sports. And first came Joe Buck and Greg Norman as Fox Sports' top on-air voices when the network debuts its golf coverage next year. Then Holly Saunders left Golf Channel for Fox Sports to serve as a reporter host. Fox Sports later continued to build its golf broadcast team with the addition of Brad Faxon as a studio analyst and hole announcer, and former USGA executive director David Fay as its rules analyst. Now they announced the addition of four big names to their inaugural USGA Championships coverage. Julie Inkster, Corey Paving, Steve Flesch, and Shane O'Donoghue have joined the Fox Sports crew for coverage for the USGA Championships beginning next year. Inkster will be an analyst for the U.S. Women's Open, in addition to offering on-course insight for the U.S. Open, U.S. Senior Open, and select amateur championships. Flesch will serve as a hole announcer for the majority of Fox Sports USGA Championship telecasts, while O'Donoghue will host Fox Sports USGA telecasts and amateur coverage, and Paving will serve as event and studio analyst for the 2015 U.S. Open at Chambersburg. Inkster might be the highest profile of the four additions. She's a Hall of Famer who claimed several major championships, including the U.S. women's victories in 92 and 2002, and 24 additional LPGA wins to date. She's a nine-time member of the U.S. Solheim Cup team, and she's the all-time American points leader and will serve as the captain of next year's team. She was also a 1984 LPGA Rookie of the Year and 1999 Female Player of the Year. Paving is another major champion. He won the 95 U.S. Championship, spent more than 150 weeks, ranked among the top 10 in the official world golf rankings between 1986 and 1997, and he claimed 15 PGA Tour titles, topped the Tour's money list in 1991, and was named also that year the Player of the Year. In addition, Flesch was the 1998 PGA Rookie of the Year and holds four PGA Tour victories and one international victory, while O'Donoghue, he's a versatile Irish host, interviewer, and golf historian journalist who moved to Fox Sports from CNN, where he hosted since 2011, and prior to that, he worked to golf from Golf Channel, RTE in Ireland, and BBC TV Golf on Air as a host, reporter, and analyst for tournaments just such as the Masters, the Open Championships, PGA Championship, the Barclays Scottish Open Championships, and the Ryder Cup. Fred, Fox Sports continues to assemble a very interesting team, which is a formidable mix of experience and expertise, and I think it will provide a very competitive play-by-play and analysis for all of the USGA Championships Fox Sports will be televising next year.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. You know, they've kind of gone outside. I thought maybe they would steal some people from some of the other networks, you know, especially maybe some of the ABC guys. You know, Paul Azier's name doesn't turn up in there, and I always thought Paul did a great job on broadcast. It sounds like they're getting ready to go, and you know, it'll be time for them to get going before you know it, you know, with the big USG events that they have on tap for next year. Hey, Carlos, you know, there has been a severe drought in California. I think this is going on, I think it's over 2 years now. And, you know, it's a big agriculture area. They're drilling wells deeper than they've ever dug them down there. I mean, they're going down. They're draining the aquifers because they're digging so deep. I mean, it's a really dangerous situation. So one of the golf courses over there has taken an interesting step due to this severe drought that has hit California. Carmel Mountain Ranch Country Club, it's just outside of San Diego. It was a course designed by Ron Frame. It opened in 1986. It's hosted U.S. Open qualifiers and San Diego Opens. It closed at the end of October for a complete renovation. It is just one of eight or nine golf courses in the San Diego area owned by JC Golf, which is a part of JC Resorts. They are completely tearing up 50 acres of turf and redesigned the course to form more of a desert-like landscape golf course. It'd be more like something what you see in maybe in Arizona. They're putting $4.4 million into this project, and they expect to reopen in late December. So they are, they're working right at it pretty fast. But the result of this is they will use 35 million gallons less of water every year. That's a 40% savings to maintain the course on an annual basis. That's enough water to furnish water for 278, you know, maybe up to 300 households if they don't do laundry every other day. Governor Jerry Brown declared California a drought state of emergency in January of this year, and then the state has offered incentives for larger water consumers to decrease the amount of water that they use every year. So this is one step that a golf course is taking, seeing huge savings in water usage. A spokesman for the company said, "We are happy to implement this water-saving project at the Carmel Mountain Ranch Country Club, especially in this devastating drought and in a semi-arid climate like San Diego's. It's important we all do our part to save as much water as we can. We are confident our patrons will enjoy the beautiful desert-style landscaping and also feel better about playing at a water-conserving course." So we have to applaud them for their effort. I know they're probably getting some tax abatements and some incentive to do that, but still, close the golf course for a couple months, you know, lay out $4.4 million, you know, in the names of conservation and saving water. Hats off to them. Good job there.
Yeah, that's a good way to say, you know, now you're playing a desert. I love that part. It's great way to put it. Hey, Fred, this is a good one. You know, Hollywood stars, they routinely sport jeans on the red carpet. Now, President Obama and White House staffers occasionally wear denim in the Oval Office. But if you want to stay out of the local police blotter, don't even think about wearing jeans into the clubhouse at posh Western Golf Club. Western Golf
no
Club
jeans?
In no jeans, man. Western Golf Club in Massachusetts is usually a haven of tranquility and decorum, but the peace was shattered in September when a row erupted over members wearing jeans. No, it wasn't threatening. No, we went on members there. The website of the club, set in Boston's affluent western suburbs, states that only neat white denim is allowed. And even then, only women can wear it. It says that all denim attire, including blue jeans, designer jeans, and denim jackets or dresses, regardless of color, is prohibited. It adds that women may wear neat, not torn, white denim or five-pocket style slacks in any color other than blue denim. Mr. Whipple, an executive at a Boston finance company, and his wife arrived for an evening drink with a large group of members who were also accused of violating the dress code, though it's not clearly precisely how. The verbal altercation between the group and Mr. Ferry, who one Saturday night in September became so heated that the police were called amid reports of a fistfight, according to the Boston Globe. Patrolman Joseph Kasowski said in his report that when he arrived, he observed two men engaged in a loud verbal argument. He added that neither man had any signs of physical altercation. The extraordinary incident ended when the Weeples, originally from the Edinburgh area, left the club. However, that was far from the end of the matter. Mrs. Whipple wrote a letter to the club's board obtained by the Boston Globe complaining that Mr. Ferry called her derogatory names and denying that she'd broken the threshold. She wrote, "Having spent much of my life in golf clubs around Scotland and officers' clubs in the military, I am fully aware and respectful of dress code and etiquette." Mr. Ferry was so mortified over his behavior that he issued a groveling apology to the Boston Globe. He said, I am sorry that the ongoing discord over enforcement of the club's policies has reached such an embarrassing level. Most importantly, I wish to repeat publicly the apology I gave to the people with whom I interacted outside of the club that night. It was wrong of me to have spoken that way. I have no excuse, and I sincerely regret having done so. You know, he offered to resign for a month, but he left permanently this month following a petition organized by disgruntled club members over the incident. You know, 5 couples in the club and the Weeples were subsequently suspended for wearing jeans or violating the dress code in other ways. So, I don't know, man. This is too much. At least Fridays, leave the team.
Country clubs are around where I'm at. If just a warm body and they got cash in their pocket to pay the annual fees and the, you know, and the fees at the end of the year, the assessments, they're taking, they can come on in about anything they want to wear, you know, it's no problem. They're not kicking them out for any reason, man.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah, it's incredible. Hey, Fred, we're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, we're going to have our interview, our VIG of the week. He's Cross Cavinji, a 35-year veteran in the golf business and the current president and CEO of Power Build Golf. Don't go away. Seems like we're having a little problem here with the commercial, so let me try to get this back. We're getting a little technical difficulty here. So let me see if we can restore it. So, Fred, while I restore it, do you have anything that for me to show so that I can restore this?
Do you want me to do the lead-in to the interview, or you want me to talk about something? Okay. While you work on that, we had a chance to talk to Mr. Kazungi, who is the president of Power Built. Power Built is an old company, been around a long time. They were especially known for their great persimmon heads back in the 60s and 70s before everything went to the metal heads and graphites and composites and all that stuff. So they're also well known for their baseball bats. They are the Louisville Slugger people. They also make bionic gloves. So they are a full-service sports company. And Mr. Kazungi had the chance to come to the company in 2006, and they have been transitioning to get back. They kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit, and they're making a move. They've developed some new products, some new technology. They're using nitrogen to add a little more zing and a little more excitement to their golf clubs, and they're out with a new line, Air Force One. And so we talked a little bit about that and a little bit about Power Built coming back into the market. So, Carlos, are you ready to run that, or where are we at?
I need about a minute more. Sorry, friends. You know, let me just try and hear. I'm trying to play it, but it's like, let me see. I think I got it back here. Give me 1 second. Let's see if we can run it now.
Okay.
Let's try it. Let me see if we can get it. If not, just 1 minute, I think I'll get it.
We have Ross Kazungi here with us today, who is the president of Power Built. And, Ross, we're really happy to have you this evening. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us.
Well, Fred, we appreciate it. We appreciate being on. We have some exciting things to talk about, and we love sharing our word a little bit.
Well, let's kind of go back a little bit. I think your company became involved with Power Built in 2006. How did that come about, and what's going on with that transition right now?
Well, I think over the years, you know, I started in the industry back in the early 80s and worked with a small company that was doing more private label stuff. I went off in the 90s to work at Spalding and Top Flight and then on to Jack Nicklaus Equipment Company. So very much tied into brands. Eventually went back out on my own and we're working with, doing private label and off-branded product and really saw a need as the market changed and we saw price compression going to pick up a brand. And kind of got out talking to some people and saw the opportunity to license Powerbuilt. And as we know, that's a heritage brand that's been around since 1916, and saw that as a great opportunity with the history and heritage of the Powerbuilt brand.
Yeah, it does have some history. John Helwick, the Helwick and Bradley baseball bat people, Louisville Slugger, that's even part of you guys.
Yeah, and, you know, it really gets into a whole sports theme with the companies from, you know, Louisville Slugger, I think, dates back to the 1880s. They've also branched off with Bionic Glove, and so they have a really nice niche technology there, and that's grown real well. And so there's definitely a lot of synergies still between us, and, you know, it's fun working with them.
The golf club business even goes back to, you know, like 1934, U.S. Open was won throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s. Powerbuilt, Citation, Persimmon Woods were really very high quality and used by a lot of tour pros.
It really was. In the 80s, I think we were on the top of the game there. You know, they're turning a lot of Persimmon and doing the forgings. A little bit that we're trying to get back to. You know, people always ask what happened, and, you know, I think Powerbuilt is the only company longest serving that's really been family held with the Hillrick and Bradsby family. And, you know, I think they took a little stance once the big dollars came in, and, you know, looking at how baseball works and golf works is a little bit different on the endorsement side. And, you know, I think that had an effect on it, and as the market changed and the public companies came in. But, you know, I think we have a great opportunity. We have a new technology, and as we talk about that later, you know, we got pretty wild with the designs, Fred, and, you know, we kind of got back to our roots of a good, clean, traditional look that when you look down at it, you know, players will go, I like this. This looks good, feels good. So we're kind of getting back to that heritage and some of the irons and woods that we're doing now.
You, your company is also very involved in junior golf. I know you have a strong line of junior golf products to get young players started, and you put a lot of time and money into junior golf programs as well.
You know, we really do. You know, we've supported the First Tee, been very involved with the TGA Premier Junior Golf, which is a little bit different aspect because it is a enrichment program after school. I think one of the issues in growing the game of golf is, you know, approximately 5% of the population golfs, and therefore that's about the amount of kids that get introduced to golf because of parents or grandparents along that line. And what we're able to do with the enrichment program is reach the demographics that wouldn't typically be introduced to golf by taking it directly to the school and offering it after school. So we've been the exclusive supplier for the golf equipment for 10 years since their conception, and we actually now are running a franchise here locally in the Palm Springs area to grassroots and help grow the market here locally. It's been pretty fun. We just got going, and it really is something to get out and see kids for the first time have the opportunity to play golf when typically they wouldn't be able to.
You know, one of the great things about what I've been doing the last couple of years is finding out what different areas of the country, different companies, different individuals are doing to grow the game of golf in the junior level to bring kids into the game. That is outstanding stuff, and if we can get kids coming into play and understand what it means to play the game, they're going to be lifelong players.
No, it really is. And I think we do have a lot of platforms out there. But unfortunately, some of them are intimidating to kids and parents if they're not involved in golf, and people look at the cost of it. I think in the environment that we're doing, you know, bringing in physical fitness, enrichment, you know, bringing in education into it, and make it a real fun platform, and it's not intimidating for the kids. And we hope that through this that they'll carry that on, you know, through their junior high and high school. You know, our thing is to get them started and introduce them to the course after that and actually getting out and playing. So it is a fun platform for the kids.
So as you were saying a little bit earlier, Powerboat maybe kind of lost its way a little bit in the golf club business, but you're coming out with a whole new line called the Air Force One line of golf clubs. Tell us a little bit about that. It looks pretty exciting.
Yeah, you know, it's called Nitrogen Charge Technology. And, you know, kind of an interesting story. The creator of the technology really looked at it from a standpoint of catastrophic failure. As the industry went to these new materials and the heads got bigger and the walls get thinner, you know, we see a lot more cracked heads. And that was really what he was looking at, the benefit of the product. And as we got involved in it, after we picked up PowerBelt, we started looking at the test results and playing with the different pressures with inside the head, and found that we could control the spin rates, we could control the ball speed, and also control the thickness on the face, and depending upon the pressures. So through all this, we found not only the benefit of supporting the face and the head, but also the playing characteristics were outstanding on it. And over the years, we've really worked with the shapes and the sound, because we did have some sound issues where it was a little tinny and loud. And the nitrogens turned out to be a very performance-enhancing item for the product.
So the nitrogen charging helps give you the thinnest face that you can possibly have in a golf club, which helps increase ball speed jumping off of that, but it is stronger and it does you more distance.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that really comes down to it is that we don't have any, we always refer to mechanical bracing. A lot of manufacturers, to keep this in compliance with the USGA, will add ribs or cones, or, you know, build it up in areas that will help the strength and the compliance of the product. And what we're able to do is have a consistent thickness from toe to heel, from the crown to the sole. And what that enables you is, on off-center hits, we're still getting the rebound effect, and you're not having any hot or dead spots. So it's a very consistent, you know, our you know, we find that the players, if you were to go hit five shots, well, I'm sure you know, we don't all hit it at the center of the face. You hit it in the center of the face, any golf club goes. But when you start deviating from the center, that's where people usually lose the most distance, and we're able to keep that at a higher level. So on average, the players are finding incredible distance from the Air Force One.
And I was looking online at your website, powerbelt.com, and you're able to buy clubs right there, buy your products, and your pricing is quite affordable, it looks like to me.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, what we like to explain, and, you know, we're big into custom fitting. If you go online, you can see where we have a lot of club fitters throughout the country and online dealers. And we use aftermarket shafts from all the major manufacturers. And so you're getting the real deal shaft. So that really adds to the value of what we're doing. But that also adds to the performance. I think when you take, you know, they talk about the shaft being the engine of the golf club. We like to think it's the nitrogen, but the combination of it really works. And, you know, I think that we just switched over to the Fujikura Pro 63, which we find a good shaft for a stronger player looking for a little bit lower launch angle. For a little bit slower swing speeds in the regular and stiff categories, for instance, in seniors, we work with the graphite design GD50, and that has a little bit more kick and gets a little more distance. So there's quite a few variables that we can fit you into, and, you know, actually we do a lot of that online or over the phone and do a 30-day guarantee. And so if it doesn't quite fit right, we can work on that and get you fit for maximum distance.
So you really can't go wrong. You know, it's pretty much a guaranteed deal. You get fitted to your specs with no risk and have a club that it works for you.
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, I think what's happened, you know, our big thing, Fred, is getting the name out there again and the technology out there. You know, we find that once people try nitrogen, they kind of get hooked on it. And, you know, that's why we have We currently have a fairway wood and hybrid, but we have some new technology coming out here in about 30 days on a new fairway wood. And we also run the nitrogen into the irons. And, you know, it's almost like a little bit of a cult following. Once people find out about nitrogen, they want to put it, every club in their bag with it.
Great. Well, listen, so we can find your products at powerbuild.com. There are some locations around the country. There's some places on there where you can actually go in and see somebody, talk to somebody, and see the clubs, right?
Yep, and get fitted. And we have fitting kits and throughout the country with our club fitters, so they can dial you in on the shaft that works best for your swing.
Well, again, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us and enlightening a little bit us about the golf club business, Ross, and we wish you guys all the luck with Power Built going forward.
Thank you, Fred. We appreciate it. Happy holidays.
So there you have it. That was Power Built CEO and President Ross Cabingi. Fred, Power Built, you know, that's a brand that has nearly a 100-year history and tradition of first-man drivers and forged irons that once was used by many of the best players in the world, but as you were talking about there in more recent years, however, the company lost its way, lagged behind, especially in game improvement technology, which, as we all know, is the most important thing in the golf equipment business. They became an afterthought, but they have changed since, you know, Cabingi and partner Dennis Winty, they acquired Power Built name in 2006. They have, like, injected life into the company with some out-of-the-box thinking and a bold approach to attract young consumers. Recently, they signed mixed martial arts athlete Cobb Swanson to promote the Air Force One, the Apex driver that you talked about. So they're really going out and trying to get back into it. And we have to applaud that for them because that was a brand that was very well known, a lot of history. So hopefully they can get that way back.
Yeah, I can remember Fuzzy Zeller playing the Power Belt, you know, carrying the Power Belt bag and you know, in the 70s and the 80s, and you know, they were a big name. They've been around for a long time, and you know, the club business is tough right now. You know, the sales are down. The market is not nearly the size it was at one time, and for anybody to make it to, in today's market, they have to have a good product. So I think people will like it. I would urge them to go out and find a place where they can try some, hit some. Go on the website powerbuild.com and find the locations that are around the country and give them a try. There's no, as you said, there's a 30-day no risk. Get them. If you don't like them, you can send them back. So get them in your hands, and you might be surprised.
Go there to their website. It's www.powerbuild.com, and built is B-I-L-T. Okay, so go there at www.powerbuild.com. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be at our practice range. We're going to recap the wrap-up of the LPGA and European tours. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our section, the practice range, where we, Fred and I, will take our shots and talk about a specific theme, and we have two this week, and we're going to start with the LPGA season wrap-up, and then we're going to talk about the European Tour season wrap-up, both of them ending this past week. And Fred, if this was a movie script, we would have to say that it could have never happened that way. The fact that it actually did left us all with smiles in our faces as the 2014 LPGA season came to an end. In the opinion of many, this was the greatest LPGA season ever. I have said over and over again that it seems that every tournament this year came down to the 72nd hole, and many weren't even decided then. The last three tournaments of the season all went to a playoff. There were 8 playoffs this year. Lydia Ko, the amazing 17-year-old from New Zealand, was the latest playoff winner, winning the CME Group Tour Championship on the fourth hole of a sudden-death playoff. She defeated Julieta Granada and Carlota Ciganda, as all three players finished regulation at 10 under par. Besides winning the $500,000 first prize check, Lydia also won the $1 million bonus for winning the inaugural season-long points race to the CME Globe. The tournament was filled with many other joyful accomplishments and bitter disappointments. The weekend's biggest winner, however, had turned out to be Stacey Lewis. Stacey, who would finish in ninth place, would wind up with the winner of every season-ending award. She also earned two big Hall of Fame points. Stacey won all of the following. She won the Player of the Year Award, which comes with a Hall of Fame point. The Vera Trophy, with the lowest scoring average, which also comes with a Hall of Fame point, and the 2014 Money List winner. Stacey had made it quite clear all week that winning those two Hall of Fame points was the most important to her. It was Stacey's second consecutive Bayer Trophy win and second Player of the Year award in the last 3 years. It now gives Stacey 16 of the 27 points needed to get in the Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, the weekend also had its disappointments. Inbay Park, who had a chance at all the awards that Stacey won, was never in contention. Inbay had come into this tournament as the LPGA's hottest golfer. She finished in the top 10 in her last 9 events, but her game let her down at the most crucial time of the season. So that 24th-place finish this week left her with empty hands as Stacey Lewis grabbed every award. Overall, it was a great battle between those two for the world's number one all year long, but they have to look in the rear-view mirror and have a full sight of Ko, who has the biggest story of the year. 3 wins on her first full year as a pro, even though she had to battle an excruciating wrist injury for 3 months, we might have just witnessed the pivot point where her career lifts up. She has major wins and number one in the world written all over that. You can take it for a fact that it could happen as early as next year. Michelle Wee enjoyed a breakthrough year, winning her first major and being the runner-up in another, giving her thus the first ever Rolex Annika Award, which recognizes that players had the best record on the LPGA season on all 5 majors. There were all the other major winners were first-timers like teenagers Lexi Thompson and Hyo-Yu Kim. They were joined by a veteran, Mo Martin. We saw little teenagers bursting to the scene for the first time, wins, and a lot of promise for the future led by Ko, but we also saw the veterans holding their ground. They are not ready to give their place in the sport. So with the conclusion of the 2014 season, it has left us all looking forward to what is in store next year. I want to congratulate Commissioner Michael Wan and our friend of the show, Greg Ken, and everyone on the LPGA Tour team for their efforts in bringing us this extraordinary 2014 season and the LPGA for it.
Yeah, you know, Carlos, we talked with Craig Cann on the show last week about the extraordinary seasons they were having. And, you know, it's just you can't say enough about it. I want to focus a little bit on my part-time here this evening, a little bit more about Lydia. Just phenomenal thing, you know. She topped off her award-winning rookie season by winning this week and winning $1.5 million. She got the $1 million bonus for the race to the CME Globe, and then she got the $500,000 first-place check for winning the Tour Championship. She had the Rookie of the Year honor all sewn up. You know, she has, like, almost double the points of the second-place finisher in the race of the for the Rookie of the Year. She ends up with over $2 million in earnings for the year, not counting the million-dollar bonus. That's on top of that yet. She began the week at number 3 in the race to the CME Globe rankings behind Stacey Lewis and Inbay Park. And her win, coupled with Lewis finishing T9 and Park falling all the way to T4, is what allowed her to win the bonus, jump around them. You know, Michelle Wee gave her the biggest competition for the week. You know, Michelle played really pretty well, just a couple of errant shots here and there. She'd have been right there. She finished 3 shots behind Ko, 2 in for a tie for 5th, but had a really good week. you know, Cole just plays so much older than her age. She just is so consistent. She had 71, 71, 68, 68 for the week. That's, you know, that is really strong. And that, you know, the wind was blowing there. It, you know, it's not an easy golf course. She just doesn't get excited. She just plays along. She even had to win in a playoff. You know, Julieta Granada and Carlotta Segunda. And, you know, I thought it was funny watching Carlotta Segunda, and here we just had, you know, Craig Kahn talking about her, that the Spanish players all say she's really the young girl to watch. She's going to be fiery and be a real competitor. And then she jumps up in this big event and gets into the playoff. And Carla ends up winning the playoff over Granada. Fell out early after two holes, and then they ended up going two more holes until Segunda hit her approach shot into the hazard underneath some tall grass and had to take a drop, ended up making bogey. But just a really good finish. You know, on Saturday I was watching some of it, and, you know, Stacey Lewis would be first in the race, and then Michelle Wee would move up, and then they'd fall down, and Cole would be there, and it was really good stuff. Such a great season, and to end on such a great tournament, really pretty good. You know, Carlos, I don't know what you were doing when you were 17, but 1.5 million for a day's work. That's just a little bit above a normal teenager's minimum wage for flipping burgers. You know, and I don't know if you heard Charlie Reimer on Sunday morning early on Golf Channel. He called Coach Wynn, and you know, he said, "Here's the thing, you know, she doesn't get the money. You know, Mom controls the money. Okay, she's just playing. The money means absolutely nothing to her. If she wants to buy, you know, anything, she has to go to Mom because Mom controls the trust. All the money goes into trust. So, you know, for her, the other girls are playing for that $1 million check. You know, they're playing for that money. Lydia, she's just playing. She's just hitting shots. She's playing for the trophy. You know, she's just trying to win. It's a different deal. It's a different mindset for her at this point. Until she gets a family or more dependent and needing that money or you know, realizes how important that is, you know, this is really a really good time for her. So I thought that was a really good point that Reimer made, and it turned out to be true. She did win. So as you mentioned, Stacey Lewis picked up all the hardware, the Bear Trophy, the money list, Player of the Year. But Cole got the cash, and that's pretty good stuff. Indy Park fell down the leaderboard. You know, just one of those weeks for her. I think it was a long season. I think she was tired. I could hear it in her voice when she was talking in some of the interviews during the week. So we talked about this year. What about next year? We got these five players. We got Michelle Wee. We got Indy Park, Stacey Lewis, Lydia Cole. We got Lexi Thompson. You know, I mean, my goodness, what a cast coming along, you know, for next year. We've got, they added another tournament. We're up to 33 tournaments for next year. Total purse has increased by over $4 million. They're playing for $61.6 million in total purse this year. They got 22 events inside the continental United States. So, really, everything's on the upswing for the LPGA Tour. Really, really good stuff. And if that's not enough, Carlos, I don't know if you've looked at the list of who's in LPGA Q School coming up here the first week in December, but there's two names that I know. You know, we've been watching Lydia Ko for a long time, for the last 2-3 years. Now we've been watching Minji Lee this last year. We've been watching Charlie Hall. Guess who's at LPGA Q School here in a couple weeks, Carlos? We may have another couple young ladies to be talking about next year.
Yeah, I'm sure that we're going to see that happening very, very soon. So hopefully, let's see, like we said to Craig Kane last week, hey, how can you top this year? It's going to be tough, but the LPGA is full of talent. Hey, we have to talk about the European Tour. You know, 5 days ago, Rory McIlroy, Henrik Stenson, and Justin Rose, they were trying to recreate each other's famous shots on the 18th hole at this tournament, the DP World Tour Championship, which is the European Tour season finale. 5 days later, that same trio atop the leaderboard in the European Tour season finale, Stenson was the one to win. He successfully defended the title he won a year ago. And, you know, Stenson may not have been quite a prosperous year like last year for Stenson, but after retaining his title for the first time that he defends successfully a title in his career, he can be at least happy with the way that he finished his year. You know, he had to hold off Ryder Cup teammates McIlroy, Rose, and Victor Dubuisson, who all share second place, two strokes behind. So Stenson definitely is hoping to bounce back next year by winning his first ever major championship. He is very well aware that if he's to be considered among the game's elite talents, a major title is simply imperative. And talking about major titles, McIlroy, wow, he won two in 2014 back-to-back. And he did great after almost a month off by finishing second. You know, his resurgence this year, happened despite off-course dramas, as we all remember. He split up with his fiancée, tennis player Caroline Wozniacki. He's involved in a legal dispute with his former agents, which has led him to miss some tournaments. But this has been an emphatic indication that his ascension to the peak of the world of golf and subsequent dominance is here for the long run. He has admitted there's a pressure, but on Sunday he picked up the European Money List trophy for the second time in 3 years, and they guaranteed $1.25 million share of the $5 million bonus pool that is played between the top 15 players in the race to Dubai. When he was asked for his next year's goals, he only had two words in mind, green jacket. We all know what that means. That's the Masters winning it. That's the only championship that he has not won so far, and it's really tough. No European has done it since Jose Maria Lazao in 1999, but he's well-equipped to win that trial. One bright point for the Americans, though, in the Real Tour was that Brooks Koepka earned Rookie of the Year honors. He ended the year as the 8th best player on the European Tour's Race to the White List. Next behind him was Tyrrell Hatton. He was 36, so that gives you an idea of how good Brooks Koepka did. Fred, how about the season for the European Tour?
Well, you know, we've seen the European Tour, we've seen Koepka, we've seen Uhlein go over there, work their way up through the Challenge Tour, up through the European Tour, and making their way to the PGA Tour now. And, you know, we've been talking about that for the last year and a half. Koepka did a fantastic job winning in Turkey. That really capped off a lot of work for the last 2 years. He's really been putting a lot of time in. And it's really paying off for him. I look for him to have a pretty good year on the PGA Tour. I wouldn't be surprised to see him win once or twice on the PGA Tour next year. He's the real deal. You know, what can you say about Rory? Yeah, he comes off the European Tour. He's really more of a PGA Tour player now. You know, he's getting 9 or 10 of his events for the European Tour from the PGA Tour. I think, I don't know, he played in probably 14 or 15 events total over there. But, you know, didn't play for, what, 5, 6 weeks. Walks in there. He already had the Race to Dubai sewn up without even hitting a shot in the first three final series events. Then he comes in and he contends. You know, he shoots 68, 66, 68, and, well, he really blew up. Pardon me. He shoots a 66, 70, 70, and then a 68. So, you know, really nice scores, really nice scores. And he didn't get a lot out of him. You know, one of those days he couldn't hardly buy a putt. You know, everything was just going on the edge. But you know what? The guy played pretty well, and he had some time off. So I look for Rory to have a monster year next year. I think he's got to be the odds-on favorite at Augusta National the first week of April there. Wouldn't bet against him. That's the only one he hasn't got for his career Grand Slam. So I would say he's going to be tough to beat there. Stenson played marvelous in Dubai. He seems to like it there. Got the repeat there, you know, double. Defended his title from last year. So, you know, just the European Tour has been doing well. I think they're struggling a little bit financially. They've had some sponsors drop off. They've added some other tournaments you know, we've been documenting it and covering that, but still has a really strong place in the game of golf.